Support for KMUW's Into Music podcast comes from McClelland, reminding listeners that Frank Sinatra coined the word skibbity in Strangers in the Night, which you can listen to in their downtown Wichita showroom. More info on McClelland's innovative sound, lighting, and video technology can be found at maxsound.com.
Hi, I'm Jed Bodwin, and you're listening to Into Music from the KMUW Studios, part of the NPR Podcast Network. My guest on this episode is Sammy Brew. Brew's latest release is The Journals, which stands as a tribute to his late mentor and friend, Justin Townes Earle, who died in 2020. The material is largely comprised of songs culled from Earle's journals. In some cases, they were complete songs, and in other instances, Brew compiled Earle's writings for the lyrics. One song, For Justin, is Brew's sole solo composition on the record. Brew, who has been playing professionally since around the age of 10, met Earle just a few years later and was soon sharing stages with his mentor, even appearing on the cover of Earle's 2014 album, Single Mothers. We discuss their first meeting in this conversation, as well as Brew's approach to making the album. He has also participated in some events with Earle's biographer, Jonathan Bernstein, whose book, What Do You Do When You're Lonesome, also came out earlier this year. That's Sammy Brew on Into Music, coming up now. I just find this so fascinating that you were writing songs and busking, and one of the people that you meet is Justin Townes Earle. How did that happen?
I have been busking for a long time now. Sometimes I still do. But I've always been a Justin Townes Earle fan since the beginning. He's one of the reasons I wanted to start playing. I used to have an electric guitar when I was a kid that I never played. And once I saw Justin on this acoustic guitar magazine cover, I was like, I think I have to try out acoustic guitar. And he came to Salt Lake at the stateroom, and he was just outside smoking cigarettes. So I told my dad to pull over in the middle of the road, and I got right out, and Justin came right up to me as much as I was going right up to him, and signed my guitar and kind of set this whole journey in motion for me.
He was young when he started playing. Do you think it was this kind of thing where he like saw you and said, I know what this guy is dealing with. I know what this is like. And I feel something, you know, some sort of connection to this.
The way I see it is, I think there was not many kid fans of his that he saw. And I think he really enjoyed that aspect, thinking, you know, because when we're all kids and we see the artists we like, there's kind of like this godly presence to them, you know, even if you don't meet them, you know, like, and I think he just knew I was so starstruck by him that he just decided to be the coolest guy ever. I don't know what it was. I don't know why he did it. Because next time he came through, the stateroom was 21 plus. And in Utah, you can't even get like X's or anything on your hands. So next time he came through, came to the Gallivan Center, and he got me and my dad tickets. And he came right up to me at that show. And he was like, I want you to be on my next album cover. It's called Single Mothers, and your job is to pretty much play little Justin. I told him I was born for the part. And he flew me out to Nashville for this whole thing. It was me and my dad. I got to meet Joshua Black Wilkins. And like, he's taking me out on the town when I'm like 13, you know. Like, we're going to like the five spot in the basement. And like, I've never been in bars before, you know. And I'm with Justin Townes Earle. Like hanging out. So everyone in that town on that trip was just like, who the hell is this kid? You know, and because of that, I was able to like do Americana Fest later that year, and I think he talked about me in some interview, and so I was just getting attention from all over, and that's when New West Records hit me up, and I signed my first deal when I was about, I think, 15 or 14, and then got to tour with Justin on that record. Yeah, it's like a, I think he just knew. I think he knew that the music life was an intense one, but a very sweet one. 'Cause he straight up, like, I'm convinced he's the only reason I had those record deals come my way. You know what I mean?
You're hanging out with him, and I would imagine that there's some conversations about music, but there's probably just also those conversations that we all have, jokes and stories and just little things like that that are going on as well.
Yeah, on that tour especially, like, there was, let's see, I was so starstruck every time I saw him that a lot of conversations that we had, I hate to admit, a lot of them went straight over my head because I was just in this, like, oh my gosh, it's Justin Pounds Earl, kind of thing. And I told someone recently, like, when he died, the last time I saw him, I was about 17 or 18 years old. And it was like really in passing. It was at Hardly Strictly Bluegrass. Everything was so crazy. Wasn't much time to talk, but we got to like hug, and I met Etta for the first time and watch him play. And when he died, I was about, it was like the next year, and it didn't hit me until I wrote my For Justin song a couple years later, where it's like, holy shit, like I wish I could articulate the things and questions that I want to tell him and ask him the way that I can now. Just because, like, that time was so valuable. And I got a lot of amazing lessons on that tour. And a lot of like really good music recommendations. And I remember asking him, like, where the hell did you get your pants? It's like the cleanest fit I've ever seen. And he's like, oh, it told me where he gets his clothes. And I'm like, I'll never be able to afford that, but okay.
Part of what you're talking about, I guess, with that song is, I guess, sometimes, people are, however you want to look at it, in their physical form, whatever, they're not there. But then in some ways we do get to have those conversations that go on a lifetime, and questions that, yeah, maybe they're not there to answer, but we can, if we know the person, we can kind of get a sense of like, that might have been something they would have guided me toward or something.
Yeah, and there was one live video that he had where he went on his huge rant towards the end of his life, where right before he played White Gardenias, he was like talking about addiction and he was getting really mad at the audience. And he was like, why is everyone's first question, what is wrong with you? Instead of, why are you hurting? And I think when he died, I was just like, man, I wish I could ask that question to him, like, and because of that whole experience, like, I have friends who I've asked that exact question to, like, because he went through that, like, I got to see the real side of addiction on that tour. Like, 'cause as much as he was the strong figure to not only me but to him, because I'm on that tour, he was still battling with this whole thing. And I think he ended up, well, I don't think, he definitely ended up getting baggy of something in New York. And I remember I left my hat in the green room, which I was just able to wander through the entire venue, his green room, my green room, whatever. But there, towards the end of that tour, it was like, A, you you can't go in there. And I remember vibes started coming down towards Minneapolis, and there was he was playing with the Sadies, so his band was fucking rocking, And then he got down to solo on this gig, and he was so loaded. I'm not sure on what, if it was, I'm not sure what it was, but I just started crying because the music was so good, and it was so sad that it was so good that like he was like in his element in this state. And it was just a lot for a 16-year-old kid to realize the things that your hero and idol are going through.
It's tough, and when it's a when it's an idol, when it's a friend, when it's a parent, and that feeling of helplessness, I guess, comes over you, and you're just like, I don't know what to do.
And so I try to like I said, I try to take those lessons to just people in my everyday life, 'cause it's, if this can affect our idols, then like this can affect us just the same. This can affect the people we love just the same. And even his book is a good ode to that. Like the people who knew him, he made such an impact on, but he still just had this very deep well of trouble and sadness in him. And I guess my goal with this record was to not, in the same way that the book did not glorify it, but it didn't judge him for it. I want, my main cause for writing this was Jen and Justin's daughter, Etta. Like when she listens to this, I want her to get inspired as she grows up. And I don't want her to feel that same pain, where she's gonna grow up and have all of these different thoughts. Like my dad grew up without his dad, and he still thinks about it sometimes, his dad wasn't famous or anything, but like still her dad at the end of the day. And so I just, that was my goal with this record, was to inspire her to do good in the same way that Justin inspired me to do good with my talents and my opportunities in life.
So you have these kind of scraps of things that you were sort of dealing with and in terms of like getting songs written and so forth. And a lot of times that sort of thing doesn't happen until, as many years later, the family will come to somebody and say, can you take these ideas and shape them? So I think it's very cool that you were there to kind of know about that and then run with it. And presumably his widow was all for that from the start.
Yeah, so I wrote for Justin, and at this point, like, I pretty much after Justin died, I had no desire to pursue music in the same way. Like, folk music just didn't feel right. Country music didn't feel right to play. Like, it kind of lost meaning to me. I was looking for alternatives. Took me about 2 years to write that song, and I was finally like, you know what? Maybe I at least just do this. I want to write for Justin, have the family own the masters, make the money from it. If it makes any money, it probably won't, but it's just at least my little gift and a thank you. And I ended up practicing the song at just this local bar, Funk and Dive in Ogden. And my dad filmed it because I was like, I just need to know how it sounds in a crowd. And my dad sent that song to Jen and told her the story, and she ended up calling us. And it kind of snowballed into this life-changing project. Like, I keep telling everyone, I'm scared about what happens after this record, 'cause how do I top this as far as like importance? You know, like, this is kind of like the pinnacle of an artist's career, where I got to look through the dude who is the reason that I started it all's journals, you know? And it's got me thinking about this record's like 2.5 years in, and it just came out. And it's still teaching me things to this day. Like, I'm learning Mance Lipscomb songs. That's why I've been so unorganized recently, is because I'm just learning these damn songs that Justin loved. And I'm still on it. Like, it's inspired so many songs. Sorry, I'm rambling again.
No, but I mean that really is a gift, because it's something, you know, you can continue to hone and craft and pass down. So yeah, you know, I think once more it's that sadness of when somebody leaves, but also what they leave behind that can be so you know, inspiring or motivating.
Yeah, it's nothing short of just utterly inspiring. You know, looking at these journals, Jen was like, I think I got like 30 something, 40 journals, and a lot of them are filled to the brim. And it's Jen was like, this is probably like 5% of what's really out there. Like, she was like, I'm assuming he left shit in hotel rooms, cabs, airplanes. You know, there were storage units that nobody knew about, that you know, he just had storage units all over America that, like, you know, some people never got to collect because they didn't even know that Justin was renting out these storage units for his stuff. And so it's got me thinking about my own stuff, where it's like, before this record, I was writing songs on my MacBook in my notes app. And it's like, no, like, I can't be doing this. I need physical things for people I love to look at down the road. And then, why go through all this time archiving if I'm not going to take this 100% serious? And the whole experience has just taught me to shape the fuck up, be a man, and do the things I was supposed to do.
Well, you mentioned his guitar playing, and I have to, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, because I was so often just deep in the lyrics and the world that he was creating in that and the melodies and everything, there was a long time where I absolutely overlooked the guitar playing, and now I'm like, what? If he just had that, you know, that would have been amazing.
Dude, his fucking thumb, dude. Like, I don't know how you can play lead, bass, and drums all on one damn instrument. Like, there's one I keep going back to, and it's Halfway to Jackson, live at Paste Magazine on YouTube. And this dude is going a mile a minute flawlessly. And yeah, like you said, like, I think a lot of people overlook his guitar playing, but then I've been really worried about the lyrics, obviously, just going through his stuff. But, you know, after reading his book and checking out the artists and songs that inspired him, it's like, I see where he gets it. Like, Mance Lipscomb, I just watched I'm trying to learn Going Down Slow by Mance Lipscomb, and there's this live video. Homie's got a freaking broken finger ripping this song. I'm like, okay, well, of course you're the way you are if these are the people you look up to, you know? Like, by all means, make it happen is I think the mindset.
Well, and one of the things, of course, that I absolutely love about the record is that you know, this is your tribute to him, but the fact that your voice and your own playing are so present, and that it's not that you're trying to do something in the style of, it's that you're doing this in the spirit of friendship and you know, love.
That's a perfect way to explain it, actually. It's not in the style of, it's in the spirit of.
Yeah.
I think that's exactly how I would put it. Yeah, not in the style of, in the spirit of, and just like a total ode. It had to be for Justin. You know, I was really trying to balance between who it was for, who it's about, and yeah, it's hard for me not to try to be little Justin, because that was my first gig.
Well, this is, you know, the record's out here in the world, and I'm assuming that you've, I don't know, maybe you're somebody, I know people who they don't want to hear any feedback whatsoever. They just ignore it all. But maybe you have had some feedback that you've heard that you appreciate. Has that kind of been the case?
Oh yeah, dude, they're I just got to play the book event at Grimey's and in Nashville, and I was really damn nervous, man, just 'cause I'm a purist when it comes to folk and the music I like and the artists I like. And people who love Justin Downs Earl really love Justin Towns Earl. And I have to say, I try not to listen to all of the feedback, but I do, you know? And there are people who just don't like this record, you know? Because I think Justin is just that important to them that they're just like, either this kid doesn't deserve it, which I completely agree with, or like, one of the comments was like, he's literally just ripping off Justin. And I'm like, go listen to my other records, man. Like, I'm doing the same thing there, you know? But, you know, I've got to talk to his family, and Jen and Edda love the record. Joshua Black Wilkins's kid just constantly asks for the record to play. And yeah, I gave a record to his aunt at the book event, and she was just like, I love what you're doing, but please take care of yourself, you know? And it's just something new every day with this project, man. Like, Justin meant so much to people, and I was just trying to put that in a record, I guess.
I have to tell you, I just think it's so cool that you're one of those people who found what you wanted to do in life so early, because so many people search and search, right? And they don't seem to come up with the answer, or they always think, yeah, I could do that. But you've done it, and you seem to see the path forward. So that's very cool.
Yeah, like not only did I find it was like the guy who helped me find it, who was a celebrity, sold out stadiums to me as a kid. Like I thought just everybody knew Justin Towns Earl when I was a kid. And for that dude to tell me you can do this, but you gotta earn it is so huge, man. Like, I will forever be grateful. Like, my dad puts so much energy into this record as well. Like, he's sold his mountain bikes and helped raise the money and worked overtime. And so he could come to Muscle Shoals with us. And, you know, because he's eternally grateful, because I'm his kid. And Justin was that huge launching pad for my life and for what I want to do, what I think is important. Yeah, and being a musician definitely has its own troubles, its own pros and cons, but this is definitely it's definitely what I'll be doing till I die, that's for sure.
You've been listening to a conversation with singer-songwriter Sammy Brew. His album, The Journals, featuring material from the writings of the late Justin Townes Earl, is out now. You can learn more about Sammy Brew at his official website, sammybrew.com. You can learn more about this podcast and all programming on our station by visiting our website, kmuw.org. We welcome your questions and comments at info@kmuw.org. And as always, like to remind you that our theme music is composed and performed by Torn Anderson. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.